Hello and welcome, my friends, to WrestleWolf. I'm your host, Damian Gibson. This week, we've got some news relating to Vince McMahon being sued again. That's the fourth lawsuit in a couple of weeks. Also, we've got the contract status of Kota Ibushi. What is happening with that man? We've got the three count, the good, the bad, and the mid of AEW television this week. Let's get into it. We'll start with some sad news this week. Lanny Poffo, a wrestler in his own right and brother of the Macho Man Randy Savage, passed away on the 2nd of February while staying with a friend in New York for an autograph signing. The cause of death at this stage isn't known, but the death was sudden, and he was out and about in the area a few days beforehand and was found passed away in the morning of the autograph signing. Poffo was born in December 28th, 1954 in Calgary, Alberta, when his dad, who was also a wrestler, was working for Stu Hart. But he ended up growing up around Chicago when his father settled down. He was 68 years old when he passed away. Poffo had been living in Temple in Ecuador. As I said, he was the son of a wrestler. His dad's name was Angelo, and his mum was Judy. He's believed to have been the first US wrestler to do a moonsault. Chavo Guerrero Sr. Was doing a moonsault body block earlier, but the move was later popularized by Mudo and then Rey Mysterio, a whole bunch of people. While most of his career was known as a flyer, I think most people, I definitely know him from his stint in WWF as a heel from 1985 to 92. I didn't realize that he was in WWE for that long, or WWF, as the Genius, which, as far as I'm concerned, one of the best sort of wink and a nod characters of all time. The Genius was a character that myself and David, and to a lesser extent Matt, will quote still to this day. And I mean, it's almost 40 years ago since he was doing that work. Lenny also, you know, I mean, when your older brother is the Macho Man, pretty hard to escape out of the shadow of that. But sad news to hear that the Genius has passed away, that Lenny's passed away. And best wishes to friends and family. It wouldn't be the WrestleWolf News Hour without speaking about Vince McMahon. A new lawsuit has been filed against WWE on the 26th of January regarding Vince McMahon's return to the company, making this a fourth suit. But this one is different because it's seeking all records of the investigation against Vince McMahon. So remember, he stepped aside or stepped down because an investigation was being conducted, and that was real. There was a real investigation being done by an outside firm, but we haven't heard anything about it. And so essentially this shareholder is saying, I would like to see that report because I'm a shareholder in this company. I would like to see what the findings were. The shareholder is Dennis Palkin, and he's suing WWE Inc. in the Chancery Court in the state of Delaware. Look at me, I'm in Delaware. Remember Wayne's World where they did that? Anyway, Palkin, through legal firm Bernstein, Littlewitz, Berger and Grossman LLP, Robbins LLP, Richard A. McCannis of Berwyn. We don't really need to know every single law firm. This is all news, as usual, comes from the Wrestling Observer, so thank you to David Meltzer for all of this. Exactly what happened to lead to the departure of the sixth member of the board of directors. Essentially what this lawsuit is to get all company files relating to the investigation and what happened to the six members of the board of directors that stood down when Vince came back. The lawsuit has a heavy amount of redacted material because it contains material related to internal files that they have been able to obtain. The lawsuit claims it is looking for information about the horrifying allegations, which they are, against Vince McMahon, and is attempting to ban McMahon from the board of directors. And this leads into a larger discussion, which maybe me and David will have on the next WWE pay-per-view episode, although we try not to talk too much about news and politics on those episodes because we just want to keep them fun. But a lot of there was a this isn't part of the news, it's just sort of me going off the top of my head here. There was a investor call on Saturday where Nick Khan and Triple H were asked about, and Nick Khan went out on the business news 24-hour business news channels in the States and kind of did a bit of squawking. It was actually a show called The Squawk Box or The Squawk or something like that. Basically saying, like, you know, we are in the market and when the sale happens, it'll happen quickly. So he actually put a time frame on it and said 3 months. So they are deadly serious about selling the company. So this is pretty amazing. I think lawsuits like this is why, in my humble opinion, I don't have any inside track. All I know is that I spend way too much time reading and listening and talking about wrestling. Why would Vince come back to the company if essentially his very presence being on the board is an impediment to selling it to what you could call clean investors, you know, companies that would not want that name associated with their brand. So, you know, the NBC, the company that owns NBC, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, they're not going to want that. Disney, you know, have been thrown up in some quarters. They don't want Vince McMahon running WWE. For Vince to come back, he obviously wanted to be part of the deal. He's seen Dana White do it in UFC, where it's essentially like, you can have my company, but I come with it. And the only organization that is going to be cool with that is Saudi Arabia. The Liberty Group is another one. They own like Sirius XM and Formula One. They've been slated. They're kind of the front runner at the moment. But I feel like this is all posturing and all of these rumors are being put out by WWE. So I think we'll see a sale to Vince. People don't go that hard with news stories like the one that appeared like 3 weeks ago about WWE selling, unless there's some truth behind it. So there's definitely happening. It's going to happen. I mean, 3 months is about a month after WrestleMania. So I think they're doing everything they possibly can to plump up the calf as much as possible, and then they'll take it to slaughter, they'll give it to Saudi Arabia, and then that'll be it. But anyway, and also, so the reason why I brought it up in relation to this story is that if Vince can sell to a private firm that owned the business and he still works for them, none of this comes out. There's no stories about lawsuits or people being able to demand information and being able to get it through federal law, because it's a private company again and he can do whatever the fuck he wants. So yeah, in particular they're seeking, so this claim in particular, they're seeking the investigation files regarding claims that McMahon, this is in quotes, allegedly raped and sexually assaulted employees and contracts over the course of decades. That should read contractors, not contracts. So I mean, that's just business as usual in WWE at the moment, isn't it? Like, these stories keep coming out. No one seems to give a shit. There doesn't seem to be any repercussions whatsoever. If anything, he seems to get more popular on the back of these stories. I'm glad there's somebody who is a shareholder who you know is trying to get some truth happening here. Just sucks. Anyway, in slightly more wrestling-related news and probably a little bit more positive, Kota Ibushi has allowed his contract, or not positive if you're a New Japan fan, but Kota Ibushi has allowed his contract to expire with New Japan and didn't negotiate a deal to return. In his mind, there's too much bad blood to overlook between him and the New Japan owners and bookers. He was publicly conciliatory. New Japan were publicly conciliatory to him in many ways. His deal expired on the 31st of Jan, so he's now a free agent. New Japan announced he was done with the company. It's a huge loss because Ibushi was a legitimate drawing card for them. As far as what he does next, he's planning on opening a wrestling school in the States. Is that in the States or maybe in Japan? Has taken dates... that's in Japan, sorry. Has taken dates with GCW for WrestleMania weekend. He said that he'd be open to talk with AEW, which has interested him for a long time, but he wants to open his school first. So once he opens his school, then he'll talk to AEW. I think that's code for, I've already spoken to AEW. And let's face it, AEW is Tony Khan, the Young Bucks, and Kenny Omega. And Ibushi is good friends with those guys. So I think those conversations would have already been had. It's just, hey man, let me get my school up and running and then I'll be over. Huge signing for AEW if you get him. And I think genuinely... I was going to say a huge boon for AEW, but it's kind of weird, right? Because there is this delineation between wrestling fans of like, there are the AEW wrestling fans who know New Japan stars, who know who they are excited to see them. It doesn't really relate. It doesn't equate to, you know, it doesn't equate to more ratings and more money. And Ibushi might be a bit different to other people that they've brought across as far as a major signing is concerned. I mean, he is and was a big deal in New Japan. Look, any kind of big signing like that for AEW is good and probably important right now, where it kind of seems, the narrative seems to be that AEW is failing a little bit and WWE are on fire. WWE are on fire. AEW is back to selling out shows. Even the show they did in Ohio this week got to a sellout of like 5,000 with walk-ups. And that's not that far off from what Raw and SmackDown do in the same territory. So I don't think, again, you know, we're talking about a 3.5-year-old company in comparison to a 50-year-old company. So anyway, Ibushi and AEW sounds great. Okay, let's... It's time for the three count. We'll start with the bad story of the week. Bad story. Bad. To me, this is a no-brainer this week. I actually thought there was... This whole week was a bit of a holding pattern. I don't think a lot of stories were actually advanced a hell of a lot. It was a good Dynamite and not a bad Rampage. Always entertaining. But storyline-wise... not a huge amount happened, I don't think. But the bad story of the week is Jade Cargill. I mean, first and foremost, her wrestling seems to get worse over time. The matches get slower. She's missing spots. I've been at pains to say over the last 3 or 4 weeks that this isn't about Jade Cargill. I don't hate Jade Cargill, but... Look, I'll be really honest. I don't think she's got a huge amount of charisma on the mic. I think she's a poor promo. I think she's not great in ring, and she seems to be going backwards. And we've got one of the major belts in the company hanging off her shoulder, and no one gives a fuck about it. And this storyline didn't do anything to help that at all. We had weeks of build-up to this match, right, with Velvet and Kira Hogan and the baddies. Who's a baddie? She's a baddie. He's not, like, you know. And it led up to, it's Red Velvet who's going to have the shot at ending the streak. And she got some offense in here. The match went longer than I thought it would. I'll give them credit there, at least that they tried to protect her a little bit. But what was the point in any of this? Because Jade wins, She's 50-0. And I know you get the clutch line at the end where Excalibur saying, who can dethrone Jade Cargill? It probably means either next week or the week after, the person who is going to do that will arrive. And hopefully, we can get this story over and done with, because everybody's trapped in it. You know, you talk about, a mid-card purgatory. This is, everybody's stuck in this. The fans, the wrestlers, you know, and it's a black hole for anybody working with Jade. You know, we've had so many people roll through this storyline. We've had Willow Nightingale. I think we had Nyla Rose in there for a bit. We've had Red Velvet. We've had Kira Hogan. I mean, there's been so many, and she's been fed so many jobbers. You know, and essentially we've had to watch this person do their apprenticeship in front of our eyes, and I'm not seeing anything. But besides her physique, like, I'm just not seeing anything at all. And I heard Brian Alvarez during the week, and I love Brian, and, you know, obviously Wrestling Observer is a big part of my life. I love listening to it, and it's a big resource here on the podcast. But, you know, he was saying that he went to a show and people love Jade. I was like, well, if that's the case, you know, I haven't seen many or heard many. And if that is the case, well, then this storyline is burying her very, very, very slowly. And no one wants to see that. No one wants to see death by 1,000 cuts. So let's just end this story 50-0. That's nice. It's a nice round number. Whoever comes back, hopefully it's Chris Statlander, somebody of that ilk that comes back and ends this storyline for everybody. The mid story is the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass versus the Guns. This week, this started with the Acclaimed come out, they get a squash match, everybody's going crazy, and then the Guns come out and they say they want a title shot, and they're probably, and in my opinion, they're probably due one because they beat FTR and they're winning matches. The Acclaimed say no because I'm not sure why. They're a babyface team, so for them to just be like, no, makes them kind of look like heels. So at this point, this is where Daddy Ass leaves and walks up the ramp. And he's done this a few times now where he's like, I'm done with all of you, which makes no sense because, especially with the Acclaimed, he's more over here than he almost was with fucking DX. He hasn't had this much... he hasn't had this loud a pop in 20 years. I mean, if we're trying to have some reality in the storytelling, which is what AEW does, why would this guy leave? I mean, yes, the other tag team are his sons, but the way he speaks to them, it's like he hates them. So anyway, he's walking up the ramp, and then Colton Gunn, I think, says, yeah, that's it. Run off like you always did. Why don't you go and hide in the bottom of him, a pill bottle, like you did back in the day? And the thing is, with the gun, like, the Guns are bringing up all of this history in their family as like a way for them to get cheap heat. But for me, listening to this, I'm like, oh, you poor boys. Like, you were absolutely left alone. Your dad was a drug addict, and you know what I mean? But then also, they're ripping on somebody who is in recovery. Like, everybody, like I was saying last week, I think the idea behind this is okay, like, to touch on all this personal stuff, but it's just not being done as well as it could be. And I think the thing that, so anyway, he's walking up the ramp. The Guns say that. Billy Gunn, Daddy asks, comes back into the ring. He looks pissed, and he cracks it so much that he goes, fine, all right, you want a title match, you got one next week on Dynamite. And then the Acclaimed are like, what? Oh, we didn't agree to that. What the fuck? So even though that's a bit clunky, it does push the story along okay. Like, that, fine, there's some gaps there, there's some things that don't make sense. I think what'll end up happening, or what seems to be the likelihood, is that Billy Gunn will turn on the Acclaim next week, and maybe the Guns win on Dynamite next week. Even if they don't win, I think Billy Gunn goes back with his sons for a push at the title shots at Revolution or something. I don't know what's going to happen there. It could go either way, really. But I just, what I don't understand, you know, kind of outside of the kayfabe, is why the fuck would you split up Daddy Arse and the Acclaimed? I just don't understand why you would do that. Now, I'm putting this as the mid story because we don't know for sure that it's going to happen. This could be just another opportunity to humiliate the Guns, because that's what's been happening for the last 6-12 months in this storyline. But I feel like they're using a lot of big guns, pardon the pun here, as far as like Billy Gunn's past and stuff. So I feel like this is a major turning point for everybody involved in these stories. And look, the Acclaimed were over before Billy Gunn was there anyway, but this Billy Gunn being there, I mean, the catchphrase is "Scissor me, Daddy Ass." I mean, I just, there's no way that you could break that up. It's one of the most over things in the company. So I'll be interested to see what happens here. But I thought it might be 1 week and they would move on. But no, there's a second week of this storyline, and it's worrying. It's worrying to me. The best story, this is going to be a controversial choice for a lot of people, I think. But I'm going with Eddie Kingston, Malakai Black. And look, this is a story that you would have missed if you blinked. Like, if you blinked, you would have missed it. It was on Rampage. It was about a minute and a half video promo. But Malakai cut that promo showing a frustrated and broken Eddie Kingston. A broken Eddie Kingston with a voiceover essentially replying to Eddie's promo from last week, where Eddie was like, he's done, it's fine, I'll join the house, you know, like he was broken, because he was so upset about attacking Ortiz, he didn't know where his mind was at, he'd gone crazy, so okay, I'm joining the house. And then Malakai Black this week says he doesn't want Eddie in the House of Black. He never did. And let's be honest, Eddie, you don't want to be in the house either. He says, what I wanted to see is if I could break you and make you turn on your friend Ortiz. And I did, and you did. So let's not pretend that this is anything other than that. And essentially just says, see you, champ, and laughs off into the night. And what I love about this story is that it's continuing. But I like the economy of the storytelling. I mean, like, we got a minute's worth of it last week. We got a minute and a half of it this week. And what I do like about it is it's not too spooky for this Malakai Black character. Like, he's more of a psychopath and a master manipulator. He's not a dead ghost man thing guy. And this story needs more time, and it needs to be on Dynamite. I'm just going to keep saying it until it happens. I don't quite understand. This is me just spiraling and making stuff up. But if Eddie Kingston is still being punished because he smacked Sammy Guevara backstage 6 months ago because Sammy called him fat, for some reason Tony and Sammy seem to have this bond, and that Sammy can say and do whatever the fuck he wants and whoever goes up against him gets punished for months on it. Eddie Kingston is one of Tony Khan's secret weapons. There is a bond between the audience and Eddie Kingston that I have not seen with too many other wrestlers. Bryan Danielson is one. Mick Foley is another. I would have said up until halfway through last year, CM Punk was another one. There's not many. So, yeah, like, hiding him and Malakai Black, for that matter. I mean, you almost lost Malakai Black a few months ago. He almost went back to WWE. You managed to talk him back around to keep him on AEW. And then you're putting his little, like, this story that's actually great and I'm really enjoying, we're only getting 1 and 2 minute snippets on Rampage, and they're doing amazing work with those small snippets, but you know, I would rather be watching this than fucking Jade Cargill streak. You know what I mean? I'd rather be watching this than Hangman and Mox. Sorry, I know that's going to upset a lot of people. The match was amazing this week, but that story doesn't interest me as much as this Eddie Kingston Malakai Black one does. These are two guys who are completely different. I want to see what happens. You could both have fact. You can make it a faction storyline. You don't have to blow it off with the two main guys straight away. You don't have to have that at Revolution. Maybe that's what they're doing. It's like, well, let's just build this story up. We'll have it take a turn at Revolution, then we'll really go full ball with it after that going into the next pay-per-view. Hopefully, fingers crossed, that's what's happening. But it's the story that I'm enjoying the most at the moment. You know, shout out to Hangman and Mox. I thought they had a fantastic match, and the story was okay in the sense of, like, Mox didn't knock Hangman out, so, you know, they're going to go again at some point. But, I don't know, surprise roll-ups and, you know, the storyline being that they're angry, that Hangman Page is angry that Mox won a match with a wrestling move doesn't make a huge amount of sense to me. So, but anyway, so that's the three count. I'm going to leave it there, guys. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Thanks so much for everybody who's come across to listen to the new content, the show at the end of year show with Matt, and the Royal Rumble review show with David Griffiths from The Cool Room. You can go and check those episodes out now. They're in the feed. They'll just be below this one. We do the weekly AEW news wrap and or news wrap and AEW review show. That's this one. So that comes out on Monday every week. But yeah, thanks so much for supporting us, guys. You know, Spotify figures are up, podcast downloads are up, so I really appreciate it. You know, I put a fair bit of work into this, so I appreciate you guys sharing it with your friends, and love it. Great stuff. Anyway, guys, until next week, enjoy your wrestling. I'll speak to you then.